Track from George Jones. Rest in peace. Just one more from a fine compilation I think Bear Family put it out called Dim Lights, Thick Smoke, and Hillbilly Music, Country and Western Hit Parade 1956. That was preceded by the CS Crew, 1975 Nigerian looniness. Great. It's called Funky Pack. We heard Love Is Peace. Kinski before that. New one's called Cozy Moments, the track we heard called Riff Dad. or is it Riff D-A-D? We heard the Moon Duo before that from the new Yeti 7-inch, Yeti number 13. Moon Duo doing Runaround. Wire, their new one is called Change Becomes Us. From it, we heard Love Bends. Numinous Eye did As You Like It from Clockwork Moon. Snapper from 1988, self-titled 12-inch EP, Cause of You. Then we heard some library music from the KPM Music Library. The compilation titled Music for Dance Floors, KPM Music Library. We heard Alan Hawkshaw in the track Senior Thump. Clinton Hensley from Tripping Over Pillows did I Forgot. And we opened that set with a fine Italian duo called The Pearls, self-titled record. From it we heard Elephant. That's all we heard. My name is Scott. Thanks for listening today, folks. I look forward to seeing you next week, same time, 3:01 till 6 p.m. on to Monday. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope worldwide, WFMU.org, also in Rockland County at 91.9 FM. Stay tuned. Radio Free Culture's coming right up.
this is Radio Free Culture. I'm Andrea. Tonight, we're going to be looking at an app called Hackney Here. It's the winner of this year's Pre-Europa Radio Production Award. Now, understandably, it is horrible radio to spend an hour talking about an app. It's not in the room with me. Those of us who don't live in London probably haven't downloaded it yet. But we're going to be looking at it as an example of an emerging trend in media, which is location audio, sounds that use your phone to know exactly where you're standing and they emerge accordingly. If you don't have it on your phone yet, you might want to follow along by visiting hackneyhere.com and downloading the app. And we have a blog post about the project up on the Free Music Archive. That's freemusicarchive.org. And I'm going to be linking you up all over the WFMU playlist page. Now, let me tell you more about Hackney Here. Basically, it combines location-specific interviews with music and archived audio to give you a sense of what it would be like to have this on your phone and walking through the streets of London Fields and the Broadway Market area. We've prepared a short montage. It's taken from the app itself. And then from there, we're going to head straight into my interview with Francesca Panetta, one of the most talented radio producers out there. She very kindly joined me from her bedroom, kitchen, I don't know, somewhere in her apartment, right after she finished unpacking all of her groceries. And I was in my apartment too, and we were kind of like across seas. But you hear this moment in the interview that's really worth staying tuned for, which is someone starts screaming in the courtyard outside of her window. And this is a frequent occurrence for her. And it was, I don't know, kind of a neat moment about how hearing that little bit of location audio from her kitchen just meant connected me to her in a new way. So I hope you find this conversation interesting. Let's start by hearing a little bit from Hackney Here.
Go on a journey. Sleep me in your pocket and prepare yourself. Are you ready?
I'm Ian Sinclair. I'm a writer and I've lived in this area a long time. Now, if you walk with me a little way and then move over to the left where that bench is, we'll sit down and I'll tell you a little bit about what I feel about this place and what it means to me.
Don't come around here thinking you can just come bopping on this park. Don't come to a man's park uninvited. That's like an invitation for hell.
Pig throwing on London Fields, 1788.
Secrets.
Kissed a boy in the tower block. I think he was on the fourth floor when I was 13.
If you're a gang member, get the guns in. Like, no small guns, big guns. In Hackney, if you're caught out with a 9mm, you're slipping.
I think it might have been my first kiss.
You'll notice that, like the ship of Theseus, my parts have been replaced so many times. Wood, stone, metal. I'm not sure I'm the same bench as I was when I started.
Follow me this way. Okay, stop. Wait. Close your eyes. Listen.
The water's so inviting and the bubbles let the light in and the swimming is relaxing so nobody feels like fighting in the London Fields. Lido. The splish it up and splash it up, the Hackney mix and mash it up, the tattoo and moustache it up, Lynn's in her bikini and Jonathan's in his speedos.
Joining me now to talk about the future of location audio and media is multi-award-winning producer and sound artist Francesca Panetta. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much.
All right, so this is a big question, but what is location audio and why is it different from just putting an MP3 on an iPhone?
Well, location audio, I guess, is pretty old. It could be, you know, just an MP3 or a CD or something on location. But the kind of location audio that I've been doing is specifically for smartphones. So most smartphones have got kind of GPS on them, and by using your smartphone, you can tell certain bits of audio to trigger depending on where you are. So it means that you don't have to go one particular route. You can kind of wander an area and your phone picks up where you are and plays you that particular story.
You've done a bunch of these apps. Where have you taken this idea?
So I started off in Hackney, which is the area I live in. And it's a really interesting location in that it's an area that is changing a lot in terms of its demographic. It used to be a really poor area. In fact, I think it still is one of the poorest districts in the whole of England. But in the last 100 years, it's had loads of ethnic immigrants come to the area. So we've got a lot of Turkish people here. We've got a lot of Afro-Caribbean people here. In fact, there are over 100 different languages spoken in this district. But it's also an area that's becoming gentrified at the moment. So a lot of hipsters in particular are moving here. We're seeing boutique coffee shops opening up, house prices are rising. So we've got all these different communities who are sitting side by side, all kinds of different stories, all kinds of different sounds. And it's just a really good case study for a place to give that variety of stories in one location. It also really shows how the technology is kind of exciting, because all these stories, they sit in this area, but you don't experience them when you're living here or when you're visiting here. So you literally might have, you know, the poor working class living next to the, you know, more affluent people living next to these different communities, but you don't hear their stories next to each other. You know, as much as we like to think we're living in these really integrated, very cosmopolitan area, actually we often interact and integrate, well, we often interact with the people who are most similar to us. And so it was a way really of putting all these sounds and stories next to each other in the space.
Did you imagine users from these varieties of backgrounds all engaging with the app in similar ways? Or has it just been picked up by the hipsters?
You know, as much as I'd really love for it to have been picked up by old and poor and every single one of those kind of ethnic minorities, in honesty, it probably is, the kind of social demographic that I am part of and maybe is most familiar to WFMU as well, to be honest. We can't get a detailed breakdown of that data, but anecdotally, the people who've responded have been not that dissimilar in terms of their backgrounds.
Something I've been thinking about a lot with Hackney here is the idea that apps can be a very antisocial thing. I can ruin any conversation by saying, oh, let me look this up right now, or let me show you this thing on my phone. So there's something about this experience with Hackney here where it's this solo journey through a neighborhood, but I like how what's built into it is the idea of getting to know your neighbor while you're on this very antisocial, very solo journey.
Yeah, we did an event as a like a promotion event as part of a film festival where we called it Hackney Here Plus One, and we gave people out splitters and we told them that they had to go and approach someone new and invite them to come on the Hackney Here journey with them, because it is actually really fun to do with someone else. And like originally we did it just as a testing purpose so that we could get like as many people to like give us feedback, but actually doing it with someone else and like seeing their eyes and seeing them laugh when they hear the stories is really, really nice. So it is something we'd love for people to be able to share at the same time, but the technology just doesn't kind of work for that to be able to happen yet. But yeah, the headphone splitter option is really nice.
So take us into the app. What kind of moments are created that are specific to different locations that you particularly enjoy, and what kind of anecdotes have you heard from people about their experiences within it?
So like one of the stories we've got is an ex-gang member. His name's Daryl, and he took us into the middle of the park that is takes place on the app. And he told us that actually that this area, this specific spot where he took us to, is called the Crossroads because it's the crossroads of four different rival gangs. And, you know, from a kind of middle class... I'm just going to stop a sec because there's... Did you hear that noise behind? Yeah.
What was the noise?
I live next to a house that looks after mentally ill people, and sometimes you can hear them. There's someone out in the garden. Sometimes it's not a bad day, and sometimes when it's a nice day, they go out there and you can hear them. So if you're standing at the crossroads, you can see... Daryl points out to you where these four different rival gangs, where they're located. But, you know, it's also become this very kind of genteel park where people, like, they do barbecuing on the weekends, and there's, you know, there's a really nice playground. And so it suddenly really opens your eyes to stand in the middle of this park and realize there are these, like, different kind of youth groups who are kind of competing and kind of rivals literally kind of around you. So I think that was a particularly kind of strong story, and also a particularly good use of this kind of location technology. But one of the things I really like about the app is that by kind of juxtaposing really different stories next to each other, you also get this kind of layering of history, layering of different communities, like I've mentioned before. And so right next to Daryl is this historian who talks about the history of the swimming pool. There's like an outdoor swimming pool, a Lido, also in that park. And this historian talks about the history of the Lido, or the Lido, as we should call it, which is like originally came from Italy, the idea of these outdoor swimming baths. And he also talks about how in Victorian times, actually no one had baths or showers in their houses, and how people in the East End would flock to these swimming baths to clean themselves. And so, right next to Daryl, the gang member, you're hearing about this swimming pool that's next to you that used to kind of wash all the grime off the dirty EastEnders. So, you know, I just love that juxtaposition between the stories.
Is the app able to kind of seamlessly move between past and present in that way, where you're mixing history in with this current moment?
Well, at the moment, the stories sit next to each other, so it's really in the placing of the stories that that we've put, and we did like really carefully try and put kind of intellectuals next to everyday people, and then we commissioned a whole load of artists as well to create material for the app. So we've got new short stories, performance poetry, experimental music beds. So a lot of it's in the kind of crafting of where we put the stories. But we've also got different layering on the app. So we've got a layer of music, and then a layer of kind of Atmos, kind of field recordings, wild track, and then stories. So like one of the things I really liked playing with was having different layers of, so you might have music from a different era over like a really modern day story, or some kind of archive Atmos over some really contemporary music. So we do have kind of layering within the app as well. I mean, what I'd really love to do is, and I think you can do with the technology, is actually literally put the different layers of stories right on top of each other, and then you could dig down and choose, you know, which era to listen to. But that's not something I've experimented with yet.
So take me back to when you were initially pitching the project. Was it hard to explain and hard to move past the buzzword of app and really help people understand how it would seem and feel to be within it?
Yeah, and it's interesting. It seems to me really simple idea, like the sounds just trigger off by where you are. It's not really confusing, but it wasn't until either people, like, once people have done it, they get it, and when writing the pitches, it was really hard. People just didn't seem to understand what we were getting at. And it was only when, like, we did the thing like that you do in pitches where you, like, write out a scenario and say, okay, you're walking down the street and so-and-so talks to you, and then you turn the corner and then you get this song. And then people kind of got it. But, yeah, it's, I think the idea of non-linear walks, you know, like, you can go wherever you want, your phone just knows where you are, that's still people don't immediately get that, and they say, like, what's the route, how long does it take? We're like, well, you can walk wherever you want within this map, and it can take as long as you want, because, you know, you just walk from story to story. And, you know, one of the nice things about this app is that if you, like, walk out of a story, it kind of fades out and then you fade into the next one. But the app remembers where you were. So then if you go back to that space, it, like, picks up the story from where you are. So it's really nice use of technology, but it also means that, like, how long this thing takes really depends on how fast you're walking, you know, whether you sit and listen to, like, a 10-minute short story on a bench, or whether you're just, like, zooming through on your bicycle. And just how long you want to give it. It doesn't have a beginning. It doesn't have an end.
We're working on an app right now for the Free Music Archive, and it's been really interesting for me to learn how limitations are placed on app development through the relationship with Apple and the iTunes Store. And as a user, I appreciate the way that the apps all feel consistent within the store, and there's not the clutter of other software downloading sites. I understand why Apple and iTunes have the restrictions that they do. But at the same time, did you feel like working within iOS limited your creative possibilities in developing Hackney here?
I think it was less iTunes and Apple and more the restrictions of, like, GPS and actually what's possible. Like, we thought that we'd be able to have a story for every single shop along a road, and that GPS and this technology would work, like, on all varieties of iPhones. And it's just still really early days for this kind of technology. So, you still have to work around a lot of technical restrictions. And I felt hugely compromised often.
Huh. Meaning the GPS couldn't get specific enough for the level of detail you wanted?
Yeah. Huh.
What did you learn about how GPS works in the process?
I mean, all kinds of things, from, like, how accurate it is. Like, at the beginning, people were saying, oh, it's a 10-meter radius. Well, it just isn't. Different phones have got different kinds of accuracy. Android and iPhone are massively different as well. Weather changes the accuracy. Whether you've got your Wi-Fi enabled on your phone changes it. And then now I've done apps in different places in the city as well, and how built up it is and just where it is within the very same city, you get very different types of kind of GPS accuracy. So I still don't know. I still can't go to an area and go, okay, this is, you know, exactly what the GPS is going to work like in this area.
That's so interesting. The technology needs to keep up with the ideas that you're having. As I mentioned earlier, the Hackney Here app won the prestigious Prix Europa Radio Production Award. And this isn't significant just because it's a big deal award. It actually shows that this is a direction where they imagine radio production and storytelling is headed. So what do you see in the future of this kind of app-based and location-based storytelling?
Well, I mean, I think from, like, a radio producer's point of view, it's really exciting because using place to be able to tell stories, it just opens up loads of possibilities. So, like, what I've described, yeah, it has an eclectic range of stories on it, but, like, imagine using it for drama, or, like, a choose your own adventure novel, or sound art installations. It's just, like, it seems to have so many possibilities in terms of, like, fun things you can do with it. But also, you know, like, UGC stuff, news content, putting radio programs literally on the app. It just seems to be, like, endless, which is really exciting. But I mean, more and more people are using mobile anyway to listen to audio, like, whether it's streaming radio, podcasts, you know, everyone knows that people are basically moving from laptops and desktops to tablets and mobiles, and like how we consume all kinds of media, whether it's audio or visual or text, is like massively changing, and the kind of content that we make because of that is going to change as well. So it's just really interesting whether we will be making different kinds of audio and radio programs because people are going to be using different devices and doing different things while they're listening.
Something that I'm struck by with Hackney here is the level of intimacy that you're engaging with the user. It literally says, put me in your pocket. Like, as if the phone's talking to you, and as if, like, it's that you're not alone. You're with the phone, and it's this little person in your pocket. So did you think about that level of intimacy in the design?
So that really developed while we were producing it. We were, like, trying out all different types of content, and the stuff that really worked was when you engage with the person who's doing this experience with you. And so we really encourage people to say, like, sit down on this bench with me and I'm going to tell you a story, and look at that and smell this and look down at your feet and feel this. It's really extraordinary because you're walking through this area, you feel you're physically triggering off these bits of audio, and then they're talking to you. And you know, I'm glad that came over to you when you were, like, listening to some of the content. But, like, when you actually physically feel it on location, it's even more kind of strong and powerful. And, that's one of the things when making, like, future apps. I've been telling the producers I've been working with, like, really play on that. It's really important.
So where else are you taking this, and where else do you see it going from here?
So, yeah, I'm really interested in experimenting with, you know, more playful content for these apps. So I've done four of these now, which are like specific neighborhoods all in London. And the next two that I'm doing, well, I'm just finishing the grant applications for them both. And one of them is actually international and will be playing on using a site that did have a kind of natural disaster, but looking at, I guess, what could happen if something like that happened again, but in quite a creative interpretation of that. I can't say much more than that. The other one is another London-based app, but it takes us, all I can say is it would take us underground, so into kind of hidden spaces underground, and charting paths that you can't get into. And that's a really exciting project because it's also, the grant would be really pushing the technology much further than we've used before. So that's really exciting too. So yeah, those are that and maybe drama are the things that I want to do next.
If a producer's listening to this right now and thinking, I want to bring this to my community, how would you even begin a project like this? What advice do you have for people inspired by location audio?
Okay, two bits of advice. One is to really get to know the area that you want to do this in. There is no point coming up with a location-based idea if you don't know, physically know that really well. And try and do less of an area than in terms of geographically than you think you want to. Every single time I do this, I pick a really big area and then just kill myself trying to make an app for it. Like, pick a street or two. Scale down. And then I'm always recommend people look up the company that I work with in terms of the developers, because, well, first of all, they're just brilliant, but also they do an open source kind of free trial version that anyone can kind of sign up to and have a go at. And so that's a really good way of getting a taster too, to see whether it's something you want to do and get an idea of how the technology works. The company's called Calvium. and their website's called App Furnace. And yeah, it's just really great to give it a go on your phone, upload some MP3s. You can see how the map works. You attach the MP3 to a particular area on the map, and then you can go out and like hear it work. So those are the things that I recommend to people when they're interested in having a go.
I'm curious about your background in storytelling. Are there any projects that you think helped to inspire Hackney here, or were the precursors to it?
Well, I mean, I must say that for 3 years before, I was running my own podcast called The Hackney Podcast. And so, like, very much the style of Hackney here is that podcast kind of turned into a location-based app. But in terms of, like, what inspires me, I mean, I'm a feature maker. I'm a radio producer by trade, and I'm a feature maker. So I spend a lot of time trying to get to know people's stories and try and capture those stories quite naturalistically. And I recommend to people who are kind of thinking about storytelling, really the best thing to do is to listen lots. So I spend enormous amounts of time listening to radio programs, listening to podcasts, going to radio festivals, taking down ideas for, you know, pieces that have inspired people, getting them to send me MP3s, figuring out why I like them. You know, I go to lots of radio conferences where we spend literally days analyzing programs. Why do they work? Why does this form of, you know, narration, narrative, storytelling work? I'm kind of obsessed by it. And I think that is what helps you get your own style and your own voice in terms of storytelling.
What's on your podcast reading list right now? What are your favorites?
I've just been listening to a couple of KCRW podcasts recently, The Organist and Strangers. I've been listening to both quite similar in style. I'm just about to check out Ben Walker's new podcast, which you told me about, which I haven't listened to yet. So I will do that. So they're all American. I've been listening to quite a lot of ABC's features. ABC is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's national radio station, and they do beautiful documentaries, like really carefully crafted, lots of sound designs. So their documentary slot 360 documentaries is a really good place for listening to kind of crafted features.
All right, well, we're about to go listen back to some moments from your panel at this year's Radio Vision Festival in New York City. Could you tell me a bit about your experience meeting with Pike and Ellen and kind of comparing your notes about how you approach location audio?
Well, Pike I already knew, and we've talked loads about location audio. I mean, I think we both approach location storytelling in a really similar way and have been really influenced by similar people. When I was in New York, we both did Janet Cardiff's Central Park walk together, and she's been a real key influence, I think, for both of us in terms of both production techniques and storytelling techniques on location. She uses binaural recording, which I use, I love. And she very much plays with kind of using tricks of, you know, who you might be seeing or might not be seeing and what you might be thinking to kind of play with kind of reality. That is something we were both hugely influenced by. And Ellen, I hadn't met before, but of course I'm a huge Radio Lab fan. And she was talking more about events, which is interesting because it's something that I've had much less experience of, but I know that the audio world is also headed in, you know, the direction of more and more events and how they integrate into radio. And I guess from a kind of Radio Lab point of view, I'm really interested in how something that, you know, I see events as being almost quite crude for audio. You know, the recording is much less tight. You're in a public arena and you've got much less control of a kind of crafted experience. And Radio Lab is like the ultimate crafted radio program, at least in the US. So I found it really interesting to hear her talk about how two things that I imagine is kind of worlds apart, how she sees them living together and how she sees events kind of growing in the kind of landscape of Radiolab.
To back up kind of far, you mentioned that you use binaural recording. Could you give me a quick definition of that? Do you use the funny blue man with the ears to do that? What are your tools?
No,
there?
I don't use the dummy head. What I do is put microphones in my ears. So for Hackney Here, what I did was just put lapel mics. I just attached them to to my headphones, actually, so right as near to my ears as possible. But now I've got some proper binaural microphones which go inside your ears, so you get this like really wide stereo. So it means like I recorded all kinds of things, like bicycles passing, or I would walk deliberately through groups of children, or in between like market stalls and things, so that it feels, as you're doing Hackney Here, it feels like you've got these things whizzing around you and you're going through these, passing through these people. And like, not only is it really fun to do that, but it also, again, like plays with this idea of, is it real or is it not real? Because you get, you know, a certain amount of bleed from your headphones, even if you've got closed capped headphones. You know, you're not, often when you're listening to things out in the open space, you're not sure like what's coming through on your headphones and what's in the real world. And I really wanted people not to know whether, you know, the road sweeper behind them was really there or not. They might turn around and look, they might kind of jump if they hear a truck passing behind them. And, you know, I've got kind of dogs kind of passing and behind you in the park. And so, yeah, a bit of fun, but also like just really effective use of audio.
Well, we're going to go take a listen back to that panel. So we're going to hear you from several months ago. But thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time. Where can folks find more of your work?
Sure. So I've got my own website, which is phantomproductions.co.uk. So that's co.uk at the end. And there you can find details of all the apps that I've made so far. So that's the one in Soho, the one in King's Cross, London, and soon the one in Farringdon. So they're all London-based, but also hopefully soon there'll be this international app, as well as a whole load of radio programs and podcasts. So, yeah, all my stuff's on that website.
Oh, I can't wait for these next projects to come out. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, it's a pleasure. It was great to talk to you.
All right. Now we're about to head over and listen to our audio from the Radiovision Festival, where Francesca spoke on a panel with Pike Milanovsky from the East Village Poetry Walk, along with Ellen Horn from the public radio program Radiolab. The three super producers are going to be talking about how they're pushing the boundaries of audio with walking tours, immersive apps, and live events, plus the significance of taking risks and experimenting with new methods of storytelling. Jim Colgan from SoundCloud is the moderator. And the first voice you're going to hear is Pike. He'll be discussing how he used location audio in his East Village Poetry Walk project.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we have with this location-based kind of audio, like Fran is also working with, is we have all the visuals. We can tell the stories where they're taking place. So you sit across from Ginsberg's old apartment and hear about how he would throw down that key in the sock, or, you know, and go to the Avenue C in my walk there. You go to Avenue C and there's a big power plant there, and you hear a poem where the poet makes it, talks about it as the last station of the cross, and where Jesus is buried. So suddenly this Con Ed power plant has these totally new meanings. And I think that was interesting to me, to really get to know the neighborhood and the spirit of this place, and to share it with other people.
So you're kind of using the ambient sound of real life instead of like mixing it just with recordings.
Right.
So you didn't create a smartphone app, right? It's literally just an MP3, which is different from Franz.
Yeah.
Do you, like, would you have wanted to create an app, or was that, like, is that intentional?
I think I probably would have if that technology had been around when I started this project. But I worked on it for many years, and it wasn't really, I wasn't aware of it when I started. So, yeah. So it is very traditional. Yeah, it gives you directions, tells you to go right and left. And,
yeah.
And Franz is it just triggers when you walk into those areas, which is great.
But there's still something great about it being just audio too, right? You
right.
don't have to do anything else. But Fran, I wonder, does anything change when something is required of the user to like use an app and sort of interact with visuals in a different way?
I think not particularly the visuals. I think that people still expect it to be linear. So before we launched, we did a number of trials where we got people to user test it, and they said, you know, how long does it take? Where do I walk? We said, you can take as long as you want. You can go wherever you want. They just didn't understand it. So I think still there is a kind of perception of the kind of audio guide. And I was saying, it's not a guide. You know, you don't have a narrator. They're not all stories. You know, some of the bits are just sound art or a bit of performance poetry. And so I think kind of conceptually, it's still quite early days for it, and also what you can do with it. I mean, this was also, you know, stories and on location. But I think that you could also use it as dramas and as, you know, you can do really interesting things with the technology. But it's still quite kind of early, both creatively from our side and also from the user's side.
Yeah. And already, I guess that's the difference between when Pike started creating his and when you created yours was available technology. So in terms of the actual storytelling, do you find that you approach that, like your technique and your craft differently in this new format, this different format?
I had to kind of relearn my skills as a radio maker. So I started off by going out and using like lots of actuality and scene setting, and the nice thing about the technology that I work with this company called Calvium. They've got a website called App Furnace, which actually, if any of you want to look it up, it's you can just create a login. Maybe you could go there. And anyone can use it. It's got an amazing kind of authoring interface, and anyone can just set up an account and try this out on their own. You can throw up sounds. You create your own map. You can throw up sounds and go out and test it. And I just found that I was basically making radio packages and sticking them up on location, and it was awful. It was really patronizing. It was really slow to get to the story. So I had to re-record loads of the interviews, recut everything. Because you are there. You don't need to paint the picture. You know, you're not using the imagination the same way. You're painting, you know, we talk about using kind of enhanced layering technology, and actually the whole world is there. What you're doing is adding stories or adding another dimension to it. And so it's a very different technique of storytelling. So it was quite, at the beginning, quite frustrating, but also quite exciting learning these new storytelling languages.
Cool. And so Ellen, in terms of the adapting for the live stage too, did you feel the same thing, or you and everyone else at Radiolab, about like starting from scratch about how to approach storytelling?
I'm not sure if it was starting from scratch. It's definitely different, and it has a lot of the adjustments that we make from our initial draft to through the performance has to do with pacing. Consistently, Robert wants to tell jokes that are more complicated and faster than people can absorb in the audience, and so some of my role as director is to slow them down, allow them to hear what I hear from the audience and what I see in the audience, and really allow the physical experience to sink in. You know, if Robert's pressing forward with details, or if Chad's giving, you know, a very complicated piece of information and there's something going on visually, you just can't absorb all that at once. So pacing, I think, is the largest place I see the difference.
And then you have another opportunity, which you don't have in one of the radio, is that you have the audience right there who
that's
easier
amazing
to engage with. Yeah.
That part of it, I think, is the reason that we keep going back to it. Like, we spend all our time in these airless rooms, fighting out the details of a story with each other, and to be in a space where you hear people responding and you can hear what's successful and what isn't, it's really great. It's like validating for us all. And
does that change anything like on the fly based on the audience response? Like, does that shape how it goes?
Oh yeah. I mean, each performance is different. I'm like looking out in the room and I know I see Fia, who was in Philadelphia. Like, that was a weird night, wasn't it? It was like, it was really hot and we did this show in Philadelphia and we, Fia and I, had spent kind of most of the day trying to take advantage of the fact that there were seats in this particular theater that did not face the stage. It was like, well, that's weird that there's these seats that aren't going to be able to see what's going on. But we had these stories, the story in our show that was about these blind guys, and we decided to give some invitations out to the blind community to see if we could get members of the blind community to come and just have a live conversation on stage. And we only found one woman who like took us up on our offer, but she was amazing. And, you know, it allowed for a very live experience and to kind of experience that story in a different way. And then magically there just happened to be another blind person in the theater who just jumped in without a microphone and started telling his experiences. Just, yeah, every night's different and every crowd is different.
And so one more question on that. Do you think it's, obviously being in a live performance, it's not, as they say in the tech world, scalable in that like it's only however many people you can fit into the theater, right? But are you finding that you can do some of the things that you achieve in the live space on the air? Like, I know with your app, you're like trying to take submissions and do sort of other kind of listener engagement, right?
Yeah, I would say we've gotten more excited about the possibility of incorporating the audience in new ways. I mean, I think a few years ago we used to hear the kind of drumbeat of user-generated content and it really bummed us out. We were like, no, we work really hard on this content. We don't want just anybody to like throw something up there. We didn't have an imagination at that point for what the potential of user-generated content was. And now I don't think it's about user-generated content so much as engagement and opportunities to like listen to the audience and incorporate different experiences. Right. So we launched an app in June and we were working on a podcast a few months ago, I can't remember exactly when, but a few months ago, that was about the pain of childbirth. And so we put it out there as there were basically three male producers working on the program, and the whole piece was about how men wouldn't ever understand the experience of childbirth. So we asked our listeners to describe with words that we might use it in the podcast, which mm-hmm. we did. You know, it was lots of people came yeah. forward to add their experiences.
So maybe more palatable is user collaborated content, and even a user, Jack Dorsey from Twitter, has tried to ban the word user.
Yeah, right.
And like, so maybe it's like listener or yeah. But so Fran, when you were setting about doing podcasting at the Guardian. Could you talk a little bit about what it was like then, like what sort of opportunity you saw and how that kind of evolved as, you know, the technology evolved and maybe where it is now?
When I started, there were just two radio producers and we shared a desk and we converted a kind of broom cupboard into a little radio station. So it was pretty lo-fi. Now we're in this big new building. It's 35 multimedia producers. We do slideshows, video. We've got a whole team of podcast producers. So at the beginning, people didn't really know what podcasting was. The presenters were journalists, and it was pretty rough and ready, to be honest. We were radio producers who were used to studio engineers, and we weren't used to doing everything. So we had a big learning curve as well, and we were training up the journalists to be presenters. So from going from one news program, we now have something like 12 programs a week. The presenters are now, yeah, if you go to maybe to multi, or there might be a multimedia or something. If you do /, actually just put audio at the end there.
Okay. So you have to be in the know to get the audio.
Yeah, it's not incredibly findable, which is... So if you go down a bit, yeah, these are all our podcasts that we do. What was exciting for me was that you could just come up with an idea and launch a podcast the next day. So at the BBC, you have two commissioning rounds, one big commissioning round. The last piece that I made for the BBC took 2 years from having the idea, writing up the brief, making the program and it going out. When moving to The Guardian, I could literally come up with an idea. We could run into a studio and make something, and then you launched a weekly series. You had this incredible resource of journalists, of even equipment at your fingertips, and you know, it was really exciting to kind of totally bypass that whole process, and also not have to stick to a particular format. It didn't have to be a magazine show. It didn't have to be 29 minutes and 30 seconds exactly. You didn't have to be talk show every week, you could do a documentary. And then when I was running the podcasting team last year, I would say to our producers, like, you know, really experiment. If you don't put a show out this week, it's fine. If you put out something like really amazing the week after, and that we've got this flexibility. So I also think that part of our responsibility working in online and podcasting is actually to really embrace the creative potential in kind of podcasting and online as opposed to radio.
That's cool. And how did that evolve then? Like, where would you say it's come to now?
Well, my job now has changed at The Guardian. I'm now multimedia special projects editor, which I'm really excited about, because this is about trying to find new ways of storytelling using all kinds of media. So this is visuals, audio, video, pictures, and I'm now working in a really interesting field of web documentaries, which is working with people like the National Film Board of Canada to do things that are looking at nonlinear storytelling, mashing up together media in new ways. And so, yeah, I guess that's where we're headed now.
So it's obviously not just audio. It's like it's multimedia, just in terms of changing it, but also still audio.
It is. I think that there, especially at The Guardian, there's been a tendency to try and do everything in all media for every single story, and that is dangerous because it's very resource heavy. So, like, let's say you've got an economy story, it just does not make sense to do a big podcast and a video and a data visualization and an article and have a live Twitter stream at the time of, you know, the budget, which that is kind of what we were doing a few years ago. And what we're thinking now is, okay, let's take that story. What is the best way of telling that story? And also, if you're making an interactive with all these elements, what can each of these elements bring to that story? And trying to tell it in a kind of more subtle way.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, Pike, you also, you know, brought in multimedia, at least for the website, working with Ziga, and you know, and it looks incredible. I'd love to get your thoughts on the role of audio with all these new possibilities now. Like, do you think it's still going to be there?
Oh yeah, I think so. Sure.
Okay. Moving on.
Next question. No, I think. Yeah, and I mean, for me, the really exciting thing about these kind of location-based audio projects is that you escape this terror of the clock of the radio clock and linear storytelling in a way. I mean, my tour is also highly curated. It's not, you can't just upload your East Village poem, but and there is a route outline, so. But still, I'm not in control of the experience that mm-hmm. the listener is having, which is really exciting to me. And also, when I walk it, it's always different. I mean, it's the weather is different, and you meet people on the way. Or
are you curious about how they're experiencing it? Like, since they are kind of changing the experience, right? Like, there's no way you can get feedback of how someone has sort of created their story in
right.
the act of listening, right?
No, I get, there's an email address on the site, so I get yeah. some emails from people who give me feedback, which is great. But I like that idea of not being in control and for everyone to have their own experience. And also creatively, like you were talking about, for myself really, to with this kind of, also with the Louisiana projects, that there is no clock and
yeah, cool. So we do have some time for some questions if anyone has one, so just raise your hand if you do. But Ellen, just on the back to sort of podcasting.
Sure.
When, I mean, Radiolab emerged kind of at the time that podcasting was happening, right? And it was a new
channel. Yeah, I mean, I would say so that when you think about the history of Radiolab, I had heard a show that Jad was doing from when I was in San Francisco on my Real Player. It was a really exciting period where we were able to hear things that were being created around the world, but there wasn't yet podcasting. And he had a show that was called Radiolab that was, the concept was it was a DJ spinning documentaries, and they were curated documentaries from around the world. And so when I met him, that's when what the show was doing, and we sort of transformed it into a show that was doing original content. And pretty early on, even though we were on the air on Friday afternoon on the FM, we made the decision to not be on the hamster wheel of putting out weekly content, and that what we wanted to do was to concentrate on the storytelling and have a really high design, high production quality show. And that decision kind of has fueled a lot about Radiolab. But our idea was that we could put out five at a time, and on the radio, we weren't thinking of podcast at all. And I think the only reason that Radiolab is around today is that the podcast, then an audience found us once we had put so much energy into making these pieces, that then it turned out that people liked to download them, and we had a fairly large audience that way. We now are on the radio, even right now on WNYC at noon every Saturday at 93.9. And we're finding that the episodes, more than 300 stations are carrying them every week. Even though some of them aren't brand new, we're still only putting out about 10 new hours a year. But we put out a podcast every 2 weeks, and that audience has continued to grow over the last, 6, 7 years.
So, but just to clarify, you said Radiolab wouldn't exist if it wasn't for podcasting.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, I think, first of all, I think it would have gotten too frustrating for us to just make it for a fleeting radio audience.
Yeah.
That certainly couldn't have sustained the cost of making it. I mean, I think the big question and the elephant in the room for all of us makers is how do you finance this thing? Mm-hmm. How do you find some way to support your creativity? And Kickstarter's amazing, and that's a great opportunity. Public radio stations have for a long time been a place that allows makers to come and make creative work and creates an infrastructure that allows that. I mean, anybody can put something up on SoundCloud, they just don't get paid for it. Mm-hmm. So, for makers trying to figure out how to solve the problem of how do you get paid for it, it's a big issue. And it's, in some ways we have to all suck it up. I guess we're artists and we're not going to make a lot of money, but...
Or, I think you will see some more experimentation in that, in the near future, anyway, from what I see. But, Fran, you and I were talking about this, about sort of the benefit of just putting your stuff out there anyway. And then if anyone has a question, let us know. But do you want to talk a little bit about that in terms of, don't want to dwell too much on the monetizing part of it, but...
Well, I think it's a really important part, though. I mean, for me, it's been a bit of a hybrid. So, I mean, I'm paid as staff by The Guardian. I'm really lucky that I have, a very open brief. But also the podcasting that I've done has allowed me as an independent to then go back to the BBC and use, especially my Hackney work, as a bit of a platform. So I see my kind of Hackney podcast and Hackney Here as being it's a creative experimental ground for me, but it's also a place that I can then go back and make money. So I, for instance, the BBC came to me, they were doing a big London series, and they said, they approached me and said, we want a whole series that sound like these pieces. This piece here, this Wild Hackney piece, I've just sold a four-part series to BBC Radio 4 using the same treatment. So the money is coming back in round the back corner, but it's still by the traditional broadcasters. Another interesting model, if you look up, can you search for Soho Stories and National Trust? This is the second app that I made. The National Trust is a heritage, very large heritage company in Britain. They came to me after Hackney here and said, we want to do something that kind of rebrands our heritage image. We want to do sex, drugs, and rock and roll in Soho in London. And so we made this. So they paid me, and I set up a production company actually to do this, to make the same thing as Hackney here, but in Soho. So now I think this is an interesting funding model of making very creative multimedia content, but not through traditional broadcasters. And I'm just doing another one actually for a friend who's an artist and a writer, and we're turning her book into one of these apps as well. So the publisher and a grant has given me money to make this into another audio and video and visual guide. So I'm kind of quite interested in it, because I don't want to have my hands tied creatively by national broadcasters, because I think, you know, they don't have enough money and they don't have enough space for us. But can we be doing things other than Kickstarter campaigns to be funding ourselves to be doing these kind of projects?
Right. My poetry walk was partly funded by the Poetry Foundation. So I think our task is to find those people, those organizations that want to promote those things that you are creatively interested in. Yeah.
But do you think that you have to kind of create it first, because it is so new that you kind of have to put it out there? Because I know you didn't get paid for Hackney here, right? But you ended up getting paid for, like, kind of because of it.
Yeah, and again, going back to kind of Ken's original quote, I think you do have to start on your own, in the edges, in the sidelines, because I generally think that national broadcasters just they take safe bets. I mean, I see it in the commissioning rounds, at least in Britain. People don't want to commission stuff that they won't take the risks. You know, like in the very first the keynote speech, you know, if you don't make mistakes, if you don't take risks, you're not going to do stuff that's innovative and that is new and interesting. And public broadcasters are not generally up for taking those risks.
All right, this has been Radio Free Culture. That was a panel from the Radio Vision Festival, where Francesca Panetta, award-winning radio producer, spoke with Pike Milanovsky from the East Village Poetry Walk, along with Ellen Horn from Radiolab, and Jim Colgan moderated from SoundCloud. I'm Andreas Lindsay from the Free Music Archive. You should stay tuned for Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Hour. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Thanks so much for joining me as we geeked out of a radio over all things radio. Here comes Nardwar.